Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. I'm looking forward to talking to you today. Give me a call at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We have lines open right now. What I hear from you more often than anything else is how difficult it is for you to get through to me because the lines are always jammed. But at the moment, there is some daylight. So call me, 888-914-9149. If you could use a smile this morning, this might help. A Florida man was pulled over for speeding. He was trying to get home. This is in Flagler County. A deputy spotted him going 50 in a 30-mile-per-hour zone. And the body cam footage from the deputy was released. According to the footage, and this is an article by David Arrow, we'll get a link to this, so if you want to see it for yourself, I think you'll find it interesting. According to the footage, the man gave the deputy a myriad of reasons as to why he was speeding, including that he had just gotten the car, he was just trying to get out of sport mode, he was trying to get out before other cars that were approaching, all kinds of excuses.
This guy is full of excuses.
But the best of all, he saved the best of all. And when those excuses didn't work to get out of a ticket, he says, I just found out that Putin just said he's going to launch nuclear thermal war. He doesn't even get the terminology.
I'll tell you the truth, guy. I just found out that Putin has just said he's going to launch nuclear thermal war against the world. And I was trying to get back to my house to find out what's going on.
And then he says, I'm freaking out, man.
I'm just freaking out, man. Of course I've got to speed. You would speed, too, if you had to get home to watch. I think what he meant to say was thermonuclear war. But he said nuclear thermal war. He just makes everything very hot for a while. He got a ticket. He didn't get out of the ticket. Let me tell you my ticket story. I have a great...
So he was rushing home?
He was, yes, that's a good way to put it. Let me tell you, sit back and pop some popcorn. I want to tell you my almost got a ticket story. So I'm at work. This is in the last century, the previous century. That's how old I am. So this would have been 1983. And I'm a young dad. My second child is on the way. My wife gives me a call at work. She says, I'm in labor and they're taking me to the hospital now. So I hop in my jalopy and I am speeding. This is middle of the day, so there's really not much by way of traffic. And this is back in the olden days when California didn't have the insane traffic the way it does now. So I'm speeding. And by speeding, I mean I'm probably doing 90 miles an hour on average. Because I could. And sure enough, I was maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes from the hospital, still on the freeway. And the California Highway Patrol lights up behind me. California Highway Patrol cruiser shows up behind me. Lights go on. I have no choice but to pull over. So I pull over. And this guy gets out of his car and... As I recall, now this is many moons ago, but as I recall, he was not only angry, he was also like prepared to remove the gun from his holster. That's what it seemed like. So I, being a good citizen, I had my hands on the steering wheel. I had the window rolled down. I was polite. He says, and these are his first words to me as he approaches the window. He says, before I arrest you, I just want to know, why are you going so fast? Why are you speeding so fast? And I said, honest truth, sir, my wife is in labor. They just brought her to the hospital, and I'm just trying to get there because the baby's due now. And his next word was, okay, go. And he handed me back my license and registration. He says, go, but slow down. And I said, thank you. And I said, my wife's name is, you know, Nancy Madrid. We're at such and such a hospital. If you need to check it out, he says, I believe you, go. So he handed me my license and registration, and I drove the speed limit for the next 10 miles, and I got there in time for the baby to be born. So that's my story.
That is cool. And hand on the holster, were your hands 10 and 2?
My hands were 10 and 2.
Yep. I'm always 10 and 2.
And if ever I get pulled over at night, I mean, the last time this has ever happened to me is, you know, 30, 35 years ago, maybe longer. But I always will have the interior light on so they can see everything going on. No sudden moves. And one other story that just comes to my mind as I'm thinking about this, maybe you've been in a similar situation, but this is the first time it happened to me. I got pulled over for, I don't know what it was for now. Maybe I just barely didn't come to a complete stop at a stop sign or something, but it was in town. And so I round through the intersection, and I don't know why, but the police officer pulled me over right in front of a liquor store. And so every time I would drive by that liquor store, I would remember this incident. So this was a bit more serious. I hadn't done anything particularly bad, but whatever the infraction was enough for her to pull me over. So it's at nighttime. So I pull over and hands at 10 and 2. And it's a female police officer. She comes up, as they do, kind of along the side. License and registration, please. And so I said, my wallet is under my seat. I don't know why my wallet was under my seat, but it was. I said, is it okay if I reach down to get it? She said, well, get out of the car. Okay. So I open the car. I get out of the car. It's nighttime. She takes her gun out of her holster. So it's now out. And she has it aiming down. It's not aiming at me, thank God. So I'm on my knees. This is like a ridiculous scenario when I think about it, but I'm on my knees on the pavement. I'm reaching under my seat to get my wallet. She has her gun drawn. And I remember her saying, do it slowly. Like, yikes. Take your time, young man. So I, as slowly as I could, I pull my wallet out. I hold it up. My other hand's, you know, out in the open, free. Here's my wallet. She says, okay. So as I stand up, she holsters her pistol. And she doesn't give me a ticket. And I don't remember now why she didn't give me a ticket. But I was cooperative and she was nervous. I don't know what it was about me that made her feel that way. But she had her gun drawn. And when I produced my wallet and my driver's license, she put her gun away and she wound up just giving me a warning and off I went.
I ever tell you the first time I got pulled over?
No. Does it beat that story?
It's funny.
Okay.
All right. So I was in Tennessee and I was driving. I was 16, 17 years old. And I was driving a Chevy Citation. I don't know if you know what that is, but it is a beater. It was a piece of junk car that was falling apart. I was so poor.
And I have a very vivid mental image of a 16-year-old you in, where did you say, Tennessee?
It was in Tennessee, yeah.
Driving a beater car with like blue smoke coming out of the tailpipe.
Probably it. And I was speeding.
I can picture this.
And so I got pulled over and I pull into someone's driveway and the cop comes up and... I'll just make this as quick as possible. He says, son, is this a citation? And I said, yes, son. Officer, it sure is. And he goes, rip, here's another one. Yep, so not only did he burn me with, you know, making fun of my car, I still got a ticket. I was like, you can't do both. You can make fun of my car and then let me go, or you can not make fun of my car and give me a ticket. But he did both.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I'm sure he still loves telling it.
Yeah, and did he say "Have a nice day"?
I don't recall. I don't recall any more of the conversation. I got pulled over once in Green Bay. I don't remember why, but I was about a block away from work, and I was coming in. I was working the morning air shift, and so it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, I don't want to pull over here in the street, so I just drove the extra block.
Oh, I bet the police officer loved that.
Yeah, don't do that. So if you're being pulled over, just pull over. So he pulled out upright behind me, and he got out with his hand on his pistol, and he's like, "Why didn't you just?"
That's never a good
feeling. No, it's not. I learned my lesson, and he's like, "Why didn't you just pull over?" I'm like, "Oh, because my." I was driving another beater car, and I was like, well, I wasn't sure if my car would start again if I turned it off. So I just wanted to make sure I got to work. He's like, you work here? And I was like, yeah, I work at Relevant Radio. And I think that got me out of a ticket.
When you publish your memoirs, Cyrus, I will read them. I look forward to your autobiography.
That is code for, that's enough story time from Cyrus.
I don't know about that, but I will read it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Denise in St. John, Indiana. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Patrick. I'm always calling you when I hear something startling. I just wondered if you've ever heard of, I don't know if it's YouTube, if it's on TV. I didn't get enough out of the commercial. It was on, actually, I listen to Father Burke every morning, and they're putting advertisements now. And they showed President Ronald Reagan, and he is talking about freedom. I'm sure this was early in his presidency, and how once you lose it, a country loses it, it doesn't get it back. But then it goes to present day with, I don't know the actor or anything, but it talks about how the government is going to instruct the students in school, how there's no place for Christianity. And it's like, I just stopped in my tracks and went, oh my gosh, you know, you can see the little video clip. And it's talking about what is happening right now. And I just wondered if you've ever heard of this. The name of it, all I got was, God is Not Dead.
Okay. Well, there is a movie by that title. Is it possible that the movie is what you caught a glimpse of? Denise?
It was like switched to today, and it just really shook me. It was like, this is what's going on today. So is this like God's Not Dead 2, or there was a movie a while back? I have no knowledge of this at all.
Okay, well, let's start there. So there was a movie that came out 5-6 years ago, something like that. And it's about a high school student who believes in God, who challenges a professor or a teacher at the local high school. I forget now, was it a high school or a community college? It was one of the two. And the professor or the teacher is an avowed atheist, and he mocks the students in class for their belief in God. And this one kid, he defends his belief in God. And in the end, I think the atheist is like in a car accident or there's something. And I think maybe he professes faith in Jesus before he dies or something like that. I only even saw part of it, and I wasn't terribly impressed, quite honestly. It was one of those predictable, formulaic movies that the characters all seem to fit into the stereotypical mold. I have nothing against it. In fact, I'm sure it probably was helpful to some people to understand how to defend your faith if somebody's telling you you're ridiculous for believing in God. So if that's the movie you're thinking of, that is a movie, and it is available on PureFlix and probably any number of other platforms. Now, as far as the other stuff that you're talking about, what you said about Ronald Reagan's comments reminded me of a little audio clip that we have from him in a speech that he gave. Do we have that, Cyrus, by chance?
Yeah, right here.
Okay, so Denise, listen to this. This could be, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but this is something that Ronald Reagan had to say about freedom and freedom's last stand here in the United States.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Is it possible that that's what you heard a snippet of?
That could be it.
Okay. Well, that's floating around out there on the YouTubes, Denise. So that snippet from President Reagan's speech, if you wanted to... What's it called, Cyrus?
The Last Great Hope.
Last Great Hope. So maybe what you bumped into was an amalgamation of a few different things. Maybe not. I don't know. But those are my best guesses based upon what you told me.
Okay. Well, thank you, because this seems to be the second, like a sequel or whatever, to the movie. So I'm just going to check into it a little further, but I just wondered if you had any knowledge of it. So I thank you so much again.
Thank you, Denise. Good to talk to you. How about, is it Waite or Walt in Austin, Texas? Hello, is the first name Waite or Walt? Okay, Waite, I don't think Waite is ready. We'll come back to Waite. Let's go to Jennifer in Corpus Christi. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning, Cyrus. I have two teenagers preparing for confirmation.
Okay.
One is in their first year and one is in their second year. And anytime we kind of talk about it, they just don't share too much of what they're learning in their class. And I get a little concerned, and I was wanting to kind of help them and wanting to know if there's anything, any books or resources you recommend to kind of help prepare them for the sacrament, just to kind of supplement and make sure that they're understanding what they're preparing for.
Yeah, I definitely recommend the St. Joseph edition of the Baltimore Catechism, and that would be good for kids starting, you know, in first grade. Well, probably more like the time that they can read, so let's say maybe second grade. But the third volume in this series has a gray cover, and it shows Jesus with the Bible open and the words, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And that would be the book that would prepare students for confirmation. It's excellent. It's what I used, or what was used with me, because I didn't have a choice in the matter, but when I was preparing for confirmation and the nuns who taught at the school that I attended were preparing us, that's the book that they used to prepare us. And it was very, very good, very comprehensive. So I definitely would recommend that. Now, there are other resources, to be sure, but that's one that's inexpensive and very effective. Jennifer?
Hello.
You still with me?
Hi.
Okay.
Yes, I couldn't. I missed the very end of that. I think my phone went out. But yes, yeah, so the Baltimore Catholic third book.
Yeah, so it's St. Joseph edition, Baltimore Catechism. And if you, because we have a break coming, if you want to check my Twitter feed in about 60 seconds, and my Twitter address is at Patrick Madrid. If you want to check that in about 60 seconds, I will post a picture of it, so that you can see it, and a link to Amazon.
Thank you.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit me. I don't make any money off it, but it'll be a good place for you to check it out. Try getting it at your local Catholic bookstore first if you possibly can. Thanks, Jennifer. I think you're going to like this. I'll be right back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Man, I loved this TV show when I was a kid. In the 1960s, I think it was Thursday night or Wednesday night that this came on, like at 7 p.m. And I was glued to the TV set during that time. I absolutely loved it. And this is the original music from it, Lost in Space. Let's go to Andrew now in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Andrew.
She was harsh, you know, and that was
hey, Andrew. You're on the air.
Who's that stumbling around in the dark?
Oh my! We're having a funky day today with the phones, but that's okay, Andrew. You can call back. You can use a fake name next time if you want to. That's fine. 888-914-9149. Airbnb. Chances are you've used Airbnb before. Well, they have suspended all operations in Russia and Belarus. This is according to the CEO of the company. They're also offering up to 100,000 refugee places in their housing units for the refugees coming in from Ukraine. This is their response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And this is an article by Ken Martin. We'll get it posted if you're interested. The company announced its nonprofit arm, Airbnb.org, will offer free temporary housing for up to 100,000 refugees fleeing from Ukraine. Chesky and Joe Gebbia, chairman of the Airbnb.org company, they say in a letter that was sent out to leaders of Poland, Romania, Germany, and Hungary, offering to help to house those refugees. Except for Germany, these countries share borders with Ukraine. Airbnb donors to the Airbnb.org refugee fund and hosts of Airbnb.org will pay for the stays. At least 300,000 Ukrainian refugees have entered the European Union so far after the Russian invasion. Senior European Union and French officials say the bloc needs to prepare for millions more. That is cool, if you ask me. I think that's a really nice move for them to do that. Now, what has happened in Ukraine overnight? Well, we try to give you updates as they happen. The biggest update was a power plant, and as best as I can pronounce it, it's got like a million consonants in it. Zaporizhia power plant in Ukraine was captured by Russian forces yesterday. It caught on fire, and usually you don't want to see the words fire and nuclear power plant in the same sentence, but they go together in this case. According to the Daily Wire, Russian army is firing from all sides upon the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, according to Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. He put that out on Twitter. Fire has already broke out. Now, these are people who, for whom English is not their first language, so we should let it slide. If it blows up, it will be 10 times larger than Chernobyl. Russians must immediately cease the fire, allow firefighters establish a security zone. Well, that didn't happen. They took control of it. The Associated Press reported that one of the facility's six reactors has been set ablaze. Not good. If you want to see a Hollywood depiction of what could happen, watch the Chernobyl miniseries. It is sort of in the vein of the movie that came out in the 70s called The China Syndrome, starring Jack Lemmon and Jane Fonda. I'm not a fan of Jane Fonda. I'm a huge fan of Jack Lemmon, though. And that movie, The China Syndrome, is all about a nuclear power plant in the U.S. that has a meltdown. Now, it really happened in Chernobyl, as you remember, in 1986. And this was just before the fall of the Soviet Union. And it depopulated the area. Thousands of people were sick with radiation poisoning. Many of them died. In some cases, very horrible deaths. You don't want to get radiation poisoning, at least not the way some of those people got, because it was a terrible way to go. Now, I encourage, if you are interested in what happened at Chernobyl, watch that miniseries. It's very well acted, very well done, very accurate, and very chilling, I guess would be the best way to put it, in terms of how we don't want that to happen again. Well, it's possible it could happen again, I guess, because they say that elevated levels of radiation were detected near the plant. This is the one in Ukraine that was captured by the Russians yesterday. It provides about 25% of Ukraine's power generation. As I understand it, it's in the top 10 largest nuclear power plants in the whole world. It's added that firefighters were unable to subdue the flames because of the continued Russian bombardment. The International Atomic Energy Agency said on social media that they are aware of the reports of shelling at this nuclear power plant. They're in contact with Ukrainian authorities. The attack on the facility occurred one day after the United Nations adopted a resolution that demanded Russian forces immediately cease its use of force against Ukraine and withdraw its military forces. 141 countries voted in favor of the resolution. 5 countries voted against it. Belarus, North Korea, Eritrea, Russia, and Syria. No surprise there, I guess. And China, as well as 33 other countries, abstained from voting. The Russian invasion of Ukraine was a primary topic in the State of the Union address, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, it remains to be seen what's going to happen with that nuclear power plant. But it's apparently still on fire, and there's still bullets and shells whizzing around, which is never a good thing if you're talking about a nuclear power plant. So we'll keep you updated on that story as it develops. Let's hope it doesn't develop, shall we? Let's go to Andrew in Austin once again. Good morning, Andrew. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So struggling with a situation with some friends who got divorced, both are Catholic, and they're working on getting an annulment. I guess the wife has asked for an annulment, and the husband is not really in favor of that, right? So he's kind of fighting it. And as they're going through that process, the wife has decided she's going to remarry, you know, with a guy, I guess, who she has become friends with, or, you know, relationship with.
How old are these two?
50s.
Okay. How long was their marriage?
I think something like 28 years or so.
How terrible. I mean, anytime it's terrible, but even after so much time. So, yes, please continue.
And so when I got news that the wife was planning to remarry, I think the thing to do is to reach out and say, you know, while the annulment process is going on, that's probably not a great idea. You know, why don't you kind of wait and see, you know, if you get the annulment, then you're free to do whatever you want, right? And so, you know, that would be my, I guess I would say my preferred thing to do. But my wife thinks, well, you know, it's none of your business. Don't stick your nose where it doesn't belong, kind of thing. And I get that, you know, it's very controversial and, you know, I run the risk of alienating somebody. And
what's your relationship to them again? Tell me again, how do you know them?
Friends for probably 20 years. Our kids went to Catholic school together. You know, we ran around together, went on vacations together. There were like five families.
So you know them personally?
The Catholic school. Oh, very, very much so.
Do they solicit your advice?
No.
Okay. Do you have the kind of friendship with them that you could just offer advice unsolicited?
I think so.
Okay. That's good.
You know, we talk about spiritual stuff. We, you know, like I said, we, you know, our kids all went through Catholic school together. That's kind of how we know each other. I mean, it's not kind of how we know it. It is how we know each other.
Is she walking away from the marriage? In other words, is he the one who, you said he doesn't want the annulment, but is she the one who walked out?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And they're both
and
Catholic.
I just want to make it clear. I'm not, yes. And I'm not, I don't think I'm being judgmental. I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not, I really honestly just fear for the person's soul, right? I mean, if the annulment goes through, then she's free to get married. Just, you know, I mean, I'm sure she's probably anxious and her new beau is probably anxious. And, but.
How long has she been divorced from her husband?
A couple of years.
Okay.
Not very, I guess is the short answer.
Mm-hmm. And is there any way to know whether this third party was in the picture before the divorce?
I don't think he was, no.
Okay. Well,
I don't know that, but I don't think so.
So, okay, fair enough. So now I have, I guess, sufficient information to offer a few thoughts on this. Is that what you'd like me to do?
Please.
Okay. Well, first of all, what a tragedy for a marriage of 28 years. Presumably some children were born as well. For that to just be abandoned is heartbreaking. I don't know any other word for it. It's tragic and heartbreaking. And I would have to guess probably unnecessary. But then again, you know, every story is different. But in any case, if that's where things stand and she wants to find out whether or not she would be free to get married to this new guy, that's the proper procedure would be to start the what we call colloquially the annulment process, keeping in mind that the church cannot annul a valid marriage. If it's a valid marriage, it's a valid marriage, and as Jesus said, until death do us part. But in order to find out if it was in fact a valid marriage at the time that the marriage took place, that's what this investigation is intended to do. So the church would solicit testimonials from people who were there and knew them, who had some maybe a way of seeing if there were problems that existed at that time. And as you probably know, Andrew, there is a role in the marriage tribunal known as the defender of the bond. And that person's job is to do everything possible to demonstrate the validity of the marriage and to look for any evidence that this marriage was valid and not invalid. So it's a process. It's painstaking, but it's very thorough, and it's intended to arrive at a moral certitude that either this marriage is valid, in which case neither party is free to remarry, or the marriage was invalid or null from the beginning, in which case both parties are free to marry if they so wish. So as tragic and painful as the circumstances are, there's really nothing the husband can do to prevent it. He can't stop it from happening. He could decline to participate. He could decline to offer his testimony. That would be unfortunate. But if she wants to find out if she's free to marry, she has that right. I mean, and this is not saying that she's in the right in all of this. Who knows who's in the right and who's in the wrong? I don't know. But she does have that right to pursue that. And so presumably once that process plays out in a matter of months, typically, she would have a decision from the church telling her that the church declares that that marriage null from the beginning, or that the church says that this marriage is valid. And so then she would know whether she would be free to remarry or not. That's how it would wind up, one way or the other.
Right. No, I understand the process, but my quandary is, do I just keep my mouth shut and let things play out, or do I have an obligation? You know, I think about passages in the Bible, I'll probably butcher it, but it's, you know, if you know your friend is going to sin, you should approach them and try and talk them out of it. And mm-hmm. if you don't yeah. succeed, bring some friends and then, you know, do that.
Yeah,
and
that's
if you don't succeed
18.
With that, bring them. Yeah. So do I just, you know, it's not my business, keep my mouth shut, stay out of it. Or do I say, hey, you know, I think maybe you're going down the wrong path. You should maybe think about this. Wait till you get a final decision.
I see. Well, I certainly think that you have the right to do that. I mean, especially if you're a friend of long standing and the two of you know you and trust you, it seems to me that you have an opportunity to say something. And it would be good, it seems to me, to say something, because you don't want to look back on it later and kick yourself and say, I wished I had said something, or I wish I had said something. That way mm-hmm. you will have said it, and come what may, you'll have a clear conscience on that. Now, that, of course, I guess kind of assumes that maybe she's mistaken in leaving her husband. I mean, these are so tangled typically, it's hard to know what's up and what's down. But yes, to answer your question, and I didn't realize that was your specific question, but now that I do, sure, I think it would be a good thing for you to try to reason with them and just a one last ditch effort to see if it's possible that they could salvage their marriage. That would always be preferable.
Yeah, no, see, I don't, and again, that's not really the thing, because I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, that.
All right. Well, now I'm coming up empty. I'm not really sure what you're asking me then, Andrew.
Well, just whether or not I should approach her and say, you know, I would wait to get married until after the annulment is the process.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Somehow that flew right over my head. Well, obviously.
No, I didn't. They're not going to get back together. I'm 100% okay. certain about that.
Obviously she can't get married before the church renders a decision. She's not free to get married. And you could maybe tell
right.
her this. Just say, you know, your marriage is presumed valid unless and until it can be proven otherwise. So your
right.
marriage is still binding. You're not free to date. You're certainly not free to get married, because that objectively would be adultery. Not to mention the fact that she's not going to be able to get married in the Catholic Church, according to the canonical form, in which case her only alternative is to get married in a civil ceremony or in a civil manner. And that would be invalid, because she's not getting married according to the church's canonical form. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to do, is civil.
Yeah, not good. Not good. And yes, it finally is clear to me what you're asking. And hopefully, yeah, I would do that if I were you. I would try to reason with her. Thanks, Andrew. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. My number is 888-914-9149.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
All right, we are back. We have a line or two open if you'd like to grab one, 888-914-9149. I have some canon law stuff I want to share with you. I know that sounds boring, but it's really not. It has to do with how to understand the idea of marriage as a natural institution. You know, it predates religion. So I'll share that with you from a canon lawyer in just a few minutes. First, though, let's go to Jessica in La Crescent, Minnesota? Do I have that correct?
Yes, La Crescent, Minnesota.
Well, welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call today.
You're welcome.
So I am married to my husband,
okay.
And he is my father-in-law. We lost his mother about 7 years ago, so my father-in-law is a widowed man,
okay.
And there's 5 kids total in that family, and he is currently dating a woman who's also Catholic,
okay.
And she is a divorced woman who is apparently, from what we understand, is trying to get an annulment.
Okay.
We understand that she's, from what we understand, somebody had said she had tried in the past, and then she had stopped the procedure, and now since dating his father, my husband's father,
mm-hmm.
She has started the annulment process again, and it's, you know, my father-in-law talks a lot about how, oh, you know, it's a long process, and, you know, she should be getting her annulment. Well, he's been dating her for a year and a half to 2 years, and we're just, feel kind of like she was, sorry, I have little ones in the background.
Lady Madonna.
Hey, hey.
Children at your feet.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I get it. I totally get it, Jessica.
We were just wondering, thank you. So we are just kind of treading carefully, because we understand that she's not, you know, doesn't have that annulment. And, you know, we're just worried for our father-in-law, his
yeah.
soul, what he's going through. You know, I don't know. She's
yeah,
just been kind of introduced into every aspect of our lives, right? She's here all the,
mm-hmm.
She's here at every Christmas, birthday, and there's no way to, like, not have her there. And we don't know if we're supposed to have her there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to invite her? I mean, there.
Okay.
You know,
I think I have an idea.
Thank you.
I think
you.
I have a read on that. You're welcome. Well, as we discussed in that earlier phone call, if someone is married and then divorced, the church's presumption is that first marriage is valid until it can be shown to be invalid. So what that means effectively or practically is that she's not free to date. Now, the horses are already out of the barn. Because this has been, you know, as you said, they've been dating for a year and a half. Now, that doesn't mean that it's right. But that being the circumstances, if there's a way for you to help your father-in-law to understand that for her, and to some extent for him too, this is illicit because her marriage is presumed to be valid. Now, if she really is interested in finding out if she's free to get married, and I'm assuming he would be interested in knowing that as well, then I would strongly encourage him to encourage her to start the annulment process once again and see where it goes and see what comes of it. Because it's always better by far to know the truth than to guess and wonder and maybe wind up doing something wrong. And in the meantime, there's nothing preventing them from being friends or even being attracted to each other. This happens all the time. They can be good friends and they could be strongly attracted to each other and even in love, but they're not able or it's not permissible for them to be romantically involved. So the things that you wouldn't do with a man who's not your husband, holding hands, kissing, long walks, that kind of stuff, not to mention other things. You know, you as a married woman would not be free to do those things with another man. Nor would your husband be free to do those things with another woman. So that's the way they should approach it. It's not to say that they can't be friends or even the other things as well, but they can't act as though they're going out when she's not free to go out. Now, he is, because he's a widower. And it may be that she would get a declaration of nullity, in which case they would be free not only to have a romantic relationship, but one that could lead to marriage for the two of them. But until she knows one way or the other, they shouldn't be doing this. So as to your question, no, there's nothing sinful about having her over for, you know, Easter dinner. There's nothing sinful about entertaining where they happen to be there together, because that in itself, there's nothing intrinsically evil with providing someone with a meal or with showing hospitality in some other way. If your dad, your father-in-law said, well, we'd like to stay in your guest bedroom, would that be okay? Well, no, absolutely not. You're not married. And you're also not free to be dating, much less doing those things. So there's a line there. And if you help him see where that line is, it seems like that would be the right thing to do. And I would strongly encourage you to strongly encourage him, to strongly encourage her to start that annulment process so that at least people know where things stand. Right now, they're just guessing, yeah, and they're making the wrong decisions on that basis.
I think she's currently trying, and it sounds like it's been ongoing for quite a while, so I don't know. You know, we don't know what that means. I think he understands we're all kind of uncomfortable with this, you know, and she just has a different background than us, too. He comes from a family he had 5 kids. She never had children. And so, like, with her being around my kids, you can see that it's uncomfortable for her to be around, you know, sometimes around a large family like we have. And we're kind of close. And anyway, it's just kind of a stressor, and we're just trying to tread about this without him, you know, you just never know what could happen. And I know he has kissed her in front of my boys, and, you know, he says he loves her, and I just feel like it kind of goes beyond, you know, where he should be with her until...
Well, it does. Yeah, it doesn't kind of go beyond. It goes beyond. Now, maybe no one's ever given him that message. So if there's a loving and respectful way that you and your husband, or maybe it should be your husband's job to do that. Hey, Dad, just can we talk man to man? You know, the situation that you're in right now, I'm happy for you that you found somebody that you're really attracted to, but I just want to encourage you, Dad, not to be dating her because she's not free to get married. And maybe she will be soon if the declaration of nullity comes in. But in the meantime, she's not. And it makes us uncomfortable, Dad. We love having you here. We want to have you here. Please don't pull back from us. But at the same time, because we care about you and your eternal soul, we don't want you to, you know, be in a situation where you're causing spiritual harm to yourself and to her. So I would try it like that. And maybe this is the message for your son to deliver and not you. I mean, that's up to the two of you. Give it a thought. And thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. Let's go next to Chris in the Bay Area of California. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning. We really enjoyed very much your presentation that you had done. We saw it on YouTube regarding the Cristeros. And it was just a lot of stuff that we just never realized. And so our daughter, she shared with us yesterday some stories about the Spanish Civil War. And, you know, there was a huge martyrdom on Christians, you know, the Catholics. And so I didn't realize that. I mean, so I'm wondering if maybe you might speak a little bit to that, and maybe you can let me know what's a good book to read in regards to the beginnings of this, because
Why don't we start there? Yeah, why don't we start there?
Okay,
so I would recommend a book by Dr. Warren Carroll, Carroll, and the book is called The Last Crusade, and it is a book about the Spanish Revolution, which is widely, widely misunderstood. And people nowadays think that Generalissimo Francisco Franco was like the reincarnation of Hitler. They don't understand, I don't think, what was at stake in 1936 when the Spanish Civil War started. Hitler was on the side of the Republicans, the side of the atheists and the Freemasons who ruthlessly attacked the church. So the church was aligned with Franco. And the enemies of the church made use of this struggle as a pretext to kill off thousands of priests and bishops, and, you know, not to mention many lay people. Thousands of them were killed for their Catholic faith. And this was an upheaval that set the stage for what became secular Spain, as opposed to the Catholic Spain that existed before that. So to really understand the specifics, not to mention the people who were involved, I would recommend that book. Now, if you like that book, The Last Crusade by Warren Carroll, then I would get his History of Christendom. And it's a multi-volume set. It's, I think, 7 volumes. And there is a volume, although I don't have them here in the studio, but there is a volume in which he details, I think it's the second to last volume, in which he details the Spanish Civil War. And he goes into even more detail about that. So if you're looking for something that will give you kind of, you know, all the salient details all at once, that's where I would start.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Our daughter, she had just finished this beautiful pilgrimage. She had gone to Italy, France, Portugal, and Spain. And so she went to where there were these, they're just her good friends is who she calls them. Mm-hmm. And thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're most welcome. Yeah, it's a, what's the word I'm looking for here? The Spanish Civil War is largely misunderstood, certainly by Americans, because all you've ever heard was that it was the right-wing dictator, Franco, who was responsible for all the evils in Spain. And that's a distorted way of understanding what really happened. And Nancy and I have spent a fair amount of time traveling throughout Spain. And it was eye-opening to me that even in just my conversations with Spaniards, just people here and there talking with them, that's the story that they learned in the secular schools. They learned that Franco was this evil guy, and it was these freedom fighters who overthrew the terrible regime that was there before. And when I began to share with them some of the details about this, they were shocked in some cases because they had never heard of those things before. So it's ancient history by now. It's not quite 100 years ago, but still it's important because what happened in Spain in the 1930s and the way in which the communists and atheists were so successful, not only in overthrowing the established order, but also in killing countless Catholics as a result of that, it's a lesson that we should learn so that we don't go through it again. And I'll leave it at that. So again, the book is called The Last Crusade, and it's by Dr. Warren Carroll. He's the founder, by the way, of Christendom College. So if you look him up, you'll find his books galore. They're very readable. That's one of the things I love about his material, is that it's just page-turning, if you ask me. Meticulously documented, well-footnoted, and he's a professional, or he was a professional historian, so he knew how to write. And I think that'll be very helpful. Let's see. I don't think we have time for another call. So why don't we stand? There we go. Look at the music. We'll stand by. We'll come back to your phone calls on the other side of this quick timeout. And as promised, I'm going to share with you from a canon lawyer how to understand marriage and how to speak clearly about the institution of marriage, whether it's between two Christians or two non-Christians. We'll do that and your phone calls right after this.